Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend show. On this weekend show, we are going to be focusing a bit more on the macro environment here, as we did have the inflation data out of the U.S. And quite frankly, markets, well, they continue to, I guess, broadly roll over at the start of the year, but they are still hanging up quite close to all-time highs. And I think we're all trying to figure out just what direction markets go next, whether it is a move much higher or maybe a trading range for the first little bit of the year. We are kicking off this show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, again, focused on the macro, focused on the CPI data. Headline and core came in at a 0.3% increase month over month. That was pretty much right at expectations. So, Jesse, what did you take away from that inflation data that we got early on this year?
Well, actually, I got to correct you. They both came in hotter than expected. I think the expectation for CPI was 0.25% on core. It came in 0.31. So it did surprise to the upside. And I think when you look under the surface, things like sticky price CPI running 4.6% annualized for the month of December and for the 12 months ended in December, you have super core inflation, which is services. It's a term that the Fed uses for services CPI less housing, still running right around 5% and has curled higher in the last few months. So there's a sign you have median CPI still running hot. I think this might be the first sign that, as many people have forecasted for at least a year now, that the easy part of the disinflation is over. The hard part, the most difficult part, is going to be bringing these numbers down from 3 down to 2, down to the Fed's target. It just seems to me that there are a lot of still underlying inflationary pressures, namely wages still running 5% year over year. A lot of that driven by union negotiations, which have negotiated, massive wage increases. So I think there are signs that the inflation battle isn't won yet. And it seems like that the stock market rally at the end of the year was really a mission accomplished moment, where investors really had already, said that, inflation was back to the Fed's target or was going to inevitably. Now, I think that narrative is probably going to come into question this year, as we see inflation remain a little stickier than most bullish would probably hope for.
Well, Jesse, speaking of the market or different outlets talking about mission accomplished, we've had a lot of people that have been pointing to Janet Yellen and other Fed heads taking a victory lap that they've got their proverbial soft landing. You've made the case to us in previous shows that you still see this year as the potential of having a stagflationary backdrop versus the soft landing narrative. Maybe dissect those two points of view and where you see the spread between them.
Well, I do think we are just now entering the time, and I had said many times when we spoke last year that recession was potentially a second half phenomenon. Obviously, that's been pushed out, and that was wrong. That was early, but I do still think that we are in this window of time where the interest rates, the lag effect of the rise in interest rates, is really starting to hit. And, you look at things like the inverted yield curve, and the timing of those things when they start to have an impact on the economy is right about now. And so the delayed effect of monetary policy is just now hitting growth, I believe. And so the potential for nominal economic growth to decline is really significant. At the same time, if inflation remains relatively elevated, then you have, like you said, the potential for a stagflationary type of economy where real economic growth is poor and potentially recessionary. At the same time, inflation remains elevated. And that's really the opposite of a soft landing for the economy, right? A soft landing for the economy is inflation comes down to the Fed's target without creating a recession. So if you get inflation that does come down to the Fed's target and still get recessionary type of economy, that would be the opposite of a soft landing. And I think that's probably, far more likely than a soft landing in the economy.
So, Jesse, in terms of inflation moving through this year, do you think it just stays at somewhat current levels, or do you see another massive spike in inflation moving up to maybe 5% year-over-year numbers?
I think we are headed for another spike in inflation. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I do think we probably could see inflation remain above the Fed's target this year. It could bottom out somewhere closer to 3%, in terms of core inflation and things and median, CPI and whatnot. But probably, another spike in inflation. If you look back at like the mid 70s, it was, several years between these spikes in inflation. And I think, I've used the analogy in the past that we're kind of in this era of, I think we're going to look back at what I would call central bank speed wobbles, where the Fed is kind of overreacting to shorter term dynamics, overcorrecting. And so we're going to raise interest rates. And then if they, do indeed lower them this year, even though inflation doesn't come back sustainably lower, they're opening the door to another rise in inflation. I think you could argue that they already have, with allowing the fastest loosening of financial conditions on record, which is what we saw in the fourth quarter, right? Even though inflation remains elevated, really opens the door to a much bigger and sustainable inflation problem. So, like I said, I think we're still kind of seeing the effects of tightening of monetary policy on growth, which will also help to, keep inflation under wraps for a time. But the fact that the Fed is already, talking about, returning to a more dovish kind of stance, even while these underlying inflation dynamics are still significant, suggests to me that they're much more worried about protecting employment than they are preventing another spike in inflation, which means I think we'll probably end up with the latter.
Well, Jesse, just to that point, their dual prong nature, their dual mandate, they care about inflation, but they also care about the labor markets. So let's talk about the people in the economy here for a second. As far as the labor markets, it's continually pointed to as why we're not in a recession. Look how strong the jobs market is, even though almost every report has been revised down lower throughout the course of the year, and people are starting to recognize that they keep getting revised down. But generally, the jobs market has been stronger than most were predicting after such an aggressive rate hiking cycle. So how does that translate to the labor markets? And how does that translate to the health of the consumer? Because the people in the economy are the ones that are supposed to be supporting the business and the growth. How are the jobs market and how are the consumer doing?
Well, I mean, the jobs market, from all signs, remains, very tight, right? That's why we have 5% wage growth. Unions are able to negotiate massive increases in pay and benefits. So I think part of that is demographics, right? You have the baby boomers, and we've talked about this before, the baby boomers retiring in droves, and the subsequent generations are not big enough to really make up the difference. And so we have a shrinking labor force relative to the overall population, which is a structurally inflationary dynamic that Charles Goodhart wrote about in his latest book, which is an absolute must read. So we have these kind of structural forces of inflation that I don't think enough people really appreciate. So the labor market is tough, is really tight for that respect from, kind of a structural or secular level. But at the same time, we're seeing a lot of companies. We've seen Amazon and Google both announce significant layoffs this week. Before that, we had FedEx and Nike, and a lot of companies saying that waning demand is really putting a damper on their, top line. And so they're having to start laying people off in response to kind of right size to the level of demand. That's not showing up in jobless claims, in new jobless claims or continuing claims or anything like that. So it did, in the last December unemployment report show up in the household survey, which I think is interesting, right? I think a loss of 600,000 jobs or something and a massive disparity to the headline number. And those kind of disparities usually happen kind of late cycle, because what classically happens is the headline numbers revised lower. And then that's what we saw for many of the numbers for the second half of last year. So I do think we're at a very interesting time for the labor market, where it still remains really tight, but there are a lot of cyclical forces right now that could result in rising unemployment over the next 6 months or so.
So Jesse, if we carry this over to the markets, looking back, 2020, look, we all know what a crazy year that was with the COVID lockdowns and the crash in the markets and then recovery. But then 2021, S&P, I'm looking at a chart here, moved about 30% higher throughout that year. 2022, we all remember how tough that year was, where the S&P corrected about 30%. And then throughout last year, well, the S&P recovered all that. So it's been very, very volatile. Do you think there's any chance that this year is more of a digestion year, where we get less volatility in the markets?
I don't. I think we're in this alternating period, and I think we're probably looking at another 2022 type of environment. If you look back at what drove the market last year, it was the Magnificent Seven stocks. What drove them? It was the hype over generative AI. This year, investors expect to see generative AI drive some significant revenue growth and earnings growth for these companies. So, you know, it's time for, you know, if that doesn't materialize, there's going to be a major disappointment. And I think that there aren't any signs that generative AI is driving any revenue growth just yet. I mean, Adobe has been a good example of this, where they've not been able to raise prices or charge for AI. They've just had to add it as a free feature to the products they're already selling. I think that's what we're seeing more commonly in the industry, is if you want to add some form of generative AI to your product, people are grateful for it, but they're not going to pay up for it. So I think, you know, and the reason is there's all kinds of problems, right, with the hallucination and bad data and potential copyright issues with a lot of this stuff. It's really early on in the development of this, and so it really doesn't make sense yet for a lot of companies to pay for something that adds a lot of risk to their business and maybe not a lot of value add. So I think that this is the year where AI needs to either generate a bunch of top line growth to validate the rally of last year, or if it doesn't, there's going to be a reappraisal. And if the reality doesn't meet the hype with AI, you know, a lot of these gains these companies have seen are going to evaporate.
Well, Jesse, there's no doubt about it that AI was the hot sector of 2023. When you look forward to 2024, the year we're in now, what are the sectors that jump out to you as potentially outperforming the rest of the pack?
Yeah, well, one question I like to ask myself regularly is, what's the most hated sector in the market, or the most hated stock in the market? And I think it's the natural resource companies right now. Nobody wants to own oil stocks. Nobody wants to own precious metals miners. And these kinds of natural resources companies, the valuations are extraordinarily cheap. A lot of them trade single digit PE ratios. At the same time, NASDAQ 100 trades 30 times and the S&P 500 is well over 20 times. It suggests to me that there's a real opportunity in these companies, especially if, as I suggested, inflation is going to remain relatively elevated. I think there are signs that the demand for energy is not going away. So many people, the bear case against energy stocks has been, well, demand for fossil fuels is going to peak and roll over. That's not the case. All the estimates of demand say it's going to hit new records this year and another new record in 2025. And, you know, there's supply issues, right? I mean, I know the Saudis are having to, OPEC Plus is having to, you know, retain or hold on to a lot of these cuts, production cuts, longer than people thought. But I think the real surprise for the energy markets is going to be the failing supply from U.S. producers, right? A lot of these shale regions are seeing a peak production and are seeing wells run out a lot quicker than many analysts anticipated. The Permian is kind of the last one where we've still seen tons of growth, but it looks like it could be not as sustainable as a lot of people hope. So if you have this dynamic of kind of impinged supplies at the same time, you know, demand continuing to hit record highs, it's very, very bullish for a super cycle in energy, which is something I've been talking about for 3-4 years now. There's also, the gold stocks too, where I think if we see inflation kind of maintain at an elevated pace, not even, surge higher, but just fail to come back sustainably to the Fed's target, and the Fed is forced to taper quantitative tightening as they've been talking, or maybe even implement a few rate cuts, that's probably the most bullish scenario I could imagine for gold. And there's a lot of parallels to the 2018 to 2020 monetary cycle. The last time Powell pivoted, late 18, was, gold price bottomed and had a terrific run higher from about 1,300 an ounce to 2,000, just over 2,000. I think we're just entering a very similar monetary cycle for the gold price today.
So Jesse, in terms of those energy stocks, we have seen, as you said, record production out of the U.S., but you see declining rates there. And that record energy production has come off of less rigs. So we actually heard that some of these companies are being more efficient. In all fairness, the energy stocks have still done fairly well, though. If we look at XLE, that's at least trading in a much higher range than it was over the last couple decades. And it's the gold stocks that really don't seem to be making any headway, unfortunately. What do you think changes that narrative then? Is it simply prices exploding higher, or does it translate into markets falling or something else happening in the financial world?
Yeah, I think right now markets spent last year pricing in a return to the pre-COVID paradigm of disinflation and low interest rates and significant monetary accommodation, right? That's what I think stock market bulls and people buying the Magnificent Seven think we're going back to what worked from 2009 to 2020. What I think where there's a disconnect is I don't think there's a very good chance that we're going back to anything like that. I think we've had a paradigm shift, a sea change, call it whatever you want, in inflation, and that's going to really tie the hands of the Fed and make it very difficult for them to stimulate in the way that they did from 2009 to 2020. And we have these kind of secular inflation pressures. So what worked in that decade is not going to work in the post-pandemic decade. What's going to work in this post-pandemic decade is what worked in from 2002 to 2011, which was by natural resources. And if you look at, that bull market in oil prices and in gold price, the last major kind of super cycle in commodities, I think that's a really good parallel indication of what we're looking at for the rest of this decade is where we're going to see demand for a lot of these commodities surprise on the upside, and supplies are just really, really constrained simply because over the past decade, there's been no investment in the supplies in these things. And so you have this supply-demand dynamic. We've talked about this, I think, many times over the last year or two, where if you want a green revolution, you want all these things, you're going to have such significant demand for commodities that if you're not investing heavily in production right now, the prices have to go to the moon in order to inspire that production. So I think I'm still a big believer in that we're in the early stages of a commodity super cycle. What gives me the most confidence right now about gold is a chart that I shared with you guys that shows the ratio of the HUI Gold Bugs Index, essentially gold miners index, to the gold price. And when you see this ratio spike, and that's the miners leading the gold price, it's usually a good sentiment signal that sentiment has become far too bullish towards gold. And we saw that in 2020, the first time gold tried to break out above 2,000. We saw it again in 2022 during that attempt at breaking out. What is so exciting to me about this is this ratio is testing the bottom of its range of the past decade, suggesting there is no interest in mining stocks, even though the gold price is now breaking out over 2,000. So to me, this suggests that there's still a lot of potential demand out there, that the gold price needs to go up another few $100 before you're going to see that type of embrace, that type of overly bullish sentiment that would be indicative of a trading top. that goes along with where we are in the monetary cycle, that if the Fed's going to start tapering QT, potentially, you know, implementing rate cuts, it's very bullish for the gold price. And the fact that nobody is buying gold with this kind of very bullish monetary outlook ahead of it is extremely bullish from a sentiment contrarian standpoint.
Well, Jesse, just one follow-up on the sentiment. We talk about this all the time. I'd love to get your take on it as far as what will drive the generalist back into the sector when, in the backdrop, the Dow just hit a new all-time high in the fourth quarter of last year, and the S&P and the NASDAQ almost got to new all-time highs and eclipsed their July highs. When cryptocurrencies are ripping again, and look at the moves you've seen in Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the crypto miners, when there's so many other sectors doing well, what brings generalists over to things like the energy stocks or the precious metal stocks? Because there's a lot of competition for them.
It's the same thing that drove it during that monetary the previous monetary cycle from 2018 to 2020. It's people realizing that the Fed can't taper, the Fed has to cut interest rates, and they can't do what they need to do to effectively battle inflation. It's essentially realizing that, wait a second, disinflation isn't going to go back to that pre-pandemic paradigm. Things are different today. And if that's the case, and inflation's going to remain higher on a structural level, then I need to own things that protect me. And in a stagflationary environment, right, with not slowing nominal growth and elevated inflation, that's a terrible environment for owning general equities, right? That means you have a slowing revenue growth and rising costs is very, very damaging to profitability. And so I think that's the risk to a lot of these, the rest of the stock market, is that you see the slowing top line growth continue to slow. I mean, right, Apple's seen 4 quarters of negative sales growth for the first time in a decade plus. So if this continues and costs continue to rise, hurting profitability, it's going to really be a major disappointment to the soft landing bulls who've been buying the S&P and the NASDAQ 100. And they're going to realize, okay, if inflation's not coming back down, then I need to own things that are going to protect me in an era of structurally higher inflation. And the best way to do that is buy gold. That's what I think is going to bring the generous back in, is an inflation epiphany.
All right, Jesse, we'll wrap it up here. I know a lot of our listeners are sure waiting for those generalists, for any new investors to come into the gold sector. But hey, maybe this is the year where that happens. Maybe everything just continues to move together in one kind of universal chart too. Who knows? We'll all see. But boy, oh boy, there will be a lot for us to talk about this year and try to make sense out of any market moves. Jesse, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. We'll chat with you next month. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys. You have a great weekend, too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.